Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Fair Data Podcast, where we discuss all things FAIR, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. I'm Rory McNeil, host of the Fair Data Podcast, and my guest today is Sonia Barbosa, Manager of Data Curation at the Harvard Dataverse. Sonia, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rory. Always a pleasure.
Great. So I'd like to talk more, a lot more actually, about the exciting journey that Dataverse has gone through and where it's heading. But first, though, let's find out a bit about your background and how you got involved with data curation in the first place.
Sure, the story goes so far back, Rory. So I happen to do a lot of research as an undergraduate in college, the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester. And from the research and training I did there as an undergraduate student, I ended up at the Murray Research Archive, which was at the Radcliffe College to begin with, and then at the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Studies. And so while there, I managed several projects on acquiring and sharing data with diverse samples. The Murray Archive itself is a human subjects longitudinal data archive, where I received a lot of my training on handling sensitive data, data curation, data acquisitions, and basically helping the research community share, process, clean, and make their data available. And actually, that's how we lead into Dataverse with my experience. So I've been doing data curation, processing, cleaning, acquisitions for the past 27, 28 years.
Wow. Wow. So, all right, let's try to combine then, because how you got involved with Dataverse, but also if you could also bring in the Dataverse story, because, you know, it's interesting to me anyway, that each of there aren't that many, there's just maybe four or five of the kind of major generalist repositories. They all have a distinctive backstory. But to me, Dataverse is particularly interesting. So can you tell us a bit about how Dataverse got started and then how you got involved with Dataverse?
Sure. So the Harvard MIT Data Center was a thing. It still is a thing in some sorts. Gary and his team were working at the Harvard MIT Data Center, and I was at the Murray Archive with our team over there. Well, in the 90s, more towards the late 90s, mid 90s, they were working on what was called the Virtual Data Center, and that is the VDC, which is now Dataverse. And they were testing the VDC, this opportunity to share data in a digital environment with some of the content from the Murray Research Archive. And that's how I came to know about the project. So late in the 90s, early 2000s, there was some reorganization of Radcliffe Institute, and the Murray Research Archive became a part of the Institute for Quantitative Social Science, Harvard MIT Data Center, which is now just the Institute for Quantitative Social Science. And I was brought on board not only with the Murray Project, but also with what is now known as the Dataverse. And at that time, we were really, in the early 2000s, we were testing how this whole concept of having a tool for creating repositories and sharing data digitally would work, especially when we were utilizing the Murray data, which are mostly restricted sensitive content. And so through the years, through the early years there, I worked in bringing faculty and researchers on board to the very first installation of the Dataverse software, which was the Harvard Dataverse. So I was working on the Harvard Dataverse from about 2004 to about 2006 before we actually opened up the software and released the Harvard Dataverse itself to say, come in and deposit and share your data and meet FAIR standards. So in the background, we were doing a lot of work in testing out what was the virtual data center and then became the Dataverse. And the name came around 2004, I think is when they went from VDC to Dataverse, around 2004, 2005. We had a little contest on the name and somebody came up with Dataverse. Actually, it was Gary's daughter that came up with Dataverse. So So we went with Dataverse. Everyone liked it. And that's how I got involved. I went beyond the Murray in terms of acquisitions and training and helping researchers and faculty, mostly at Harvard, but beyond, because Gary King has a long reach, and getting them to put their data up. But we did a lot of the curation ourselves for those first 2, 3 years. So you're going to see that the very first published data set on the Harvard Dataverse is actually dated 2007. But we were working on the back end all those years getting data in there and refining the tool so that it could support the different content that we were getting at that time.
Okay, interesting.
That's
So,
a mystery.
yeah, absolutely. So, as you know, I'm an external, but as you know, extremely interested and very supportive, and admiring observer, and supporter of Dataverse. And to me, at least, it seems that the two key elements in the subsequent growth and development of Dataverse were first having a farsighted and inspirational leader in the person of
Right.
Jose Croesus. And then a second aspect, which seems to me to be also very, very important in your really impressive growth, is the emergence and then the continuing development of the Dataverse community. Because,
Yes.
I mean, could you comment on both of those? I don't know if that's right or not, but that's kind of that's what I think. What are your observations?
Yes, absolutely. As you know, Mersey left Harvard last year. But Mersey was a motivator in terms of bringing in new projects, new grants, new areas of interest into Dataverse. And of course, I mean, she was our leader, our boss, in collaboration with Gary. And she had a lot of foresight, not only into the Dataverse, but the entire data sharing community. She really saw the strength that having a community of coders and developers would bring to Dataverse, and having a community that supported this idea of a tool that allowed installation that allowed institutions, organizations around the world to easily support their community. But she saw the strength in that community, and so does and so did Gary. And up to today, we really always highlight. And anything that we do with the software, we highlight this need for community, because without the community, we wouldn't be able to be where we are with the tool. We wouldn't be able to be at this release. They contribute code, they contribute working groups. And everyone's excited about their part in making this tool grow and supporting the people that are using it. There are 89 installations around the world, and there's about 7 to 10 that have not been released yet, but there's 89 that's on our map. And so this, what we do alone at the Harvard Dataverse, for example, even though I manage the Harvard Dataverse, we provide training to all the installations around the world. Our curation team doesn't just work with Harvard Dataverse. We work with all the installation groups around the world to provide training, best practices, and show them how to, use the tool, to support their community. So, but of course, having the leaders and having their visions is what makes this happen.
So it seems like a really mutually beneficial relationship, as you say, providing curation and also I guess insight on how things on trends like Marseille was doing with the kind of a visionary, and at the same time getting the contributions from the actual users. And it seems to be also the fact that they're so geographically dispersed. You've got
Yes.
South America, you've got Europe, you've got the US, you've got Canada, and probably some other places as well that I'm not even aware of. But and each of those, well, in many cases, you've got multiple universities in each of those geographies, and each of those geographies, different things are happening in terms of research data management and FAIR data and all that. And I guess they would actually be able to contribute ideas and also kind of make sure that Dataverse is involved in all the new and exciting things that are going on.
Correct. Well, one of the things that I remember Mercer explaining to us was, and I didn't know this at that time, of course, because I didn't work with software before coming to Dataverse. I was at a physical archive with physical boxes of data. And so I remember how much they pushed having the code be open source and how open source builds trust. Hmm. And they wanted people to see what was going into the code, what was being built, the conversations that were taking place around the features, because that is a way to build trust. And we wanted to make sure that people who were using the tool felt like they were part of the community because they could see everything and be in the discussions, get themselves involved in the discussions of everything that was taking place. They knew all about our grants. They knew how the tools were being developed. They knew all about the bugs. They knew all about the improvements. They knew all of the foresight, what was coming, what we decided to scrap. And then giving the community an option to really inform us on what they want. That's something else that happens. So, you know, we use GitHub, right? That's where the code for Dataverse is hosted. But GitHub also serves as a platform where the community members can come in and say, hey, you know, our community really needs this tool. Our community really needs this. And they get to chime in and kind of help us build our future schedule. Because we say, you know, there's a real push in the community on funding agencies to get this particular feature done or get this particular workflow implemented. And we use that. It's all of that information that we get and all of the feedback that we get from the community helps to inform our future plans.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of touches on a point, has struck me as quite, I don't know if it's unique, but it's interesting. And it seems to me that it's really, really works well with Dataverse, which is your governance, which again, it seems to me that your governance, you've got the community. And then there are people within the community that take a leadership role in the governance. But then you got also the IQSS, I guess it is, the team is there. And it seems like the governance is quite almost like a partnership between the Harvard group and the community. And it seems to work really, really well. I think some communities of open source communities suffer from not having the second element, the kind of the permanent funded team like you have at Harvard to work on things. And they don't really progress very much. They're a community, they discuss things, they maintain it, but it doesn't really develop or have a direction forward. Where it seems to me that combination is what enables Dataverse to be, you know, extremely dynamic and continue to innovate. I don't know if that's right, but again, that's kind of what my sense is.
So correct. You know, when you mentioned this team of governance, so you have the developers at IQSS, you have the Global Dataverse Community Consortium, which is made up of, you know, John Crabtree, right? Philip Konzett, and these are people who really take the high level goals and mission of Dataverse, and they try to assist installations around the world in being able to take part in this. And we know about this, this idea of having this community to support new installations and ongoing installations. It stemmed out of this want to make sure that communities who wanted to have this data sharing opportunity could, regardless of finances, regardless of where they were in the world. We felt like having an open source software that could only be available to people who could afford it was not the ideal model, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, Harvard Dataverse itself is an endowed repository. It's open to the worldwide community. It's Harvard Dataverse and Odom are the only ones that I know of right now. There could be more because there's 89 now and I have to kind of get to know each one that actually take data from outside their institutions. Hmm. Okay. Harvard is the only one that was really open to the worldwide community for a very long time. But people would come to Harvard Dataverse because they didn't have the support or the developers or the funding to have their own. But with the Dataverse Global Dataverse Community Consortium and their work with DataCite in reducing cost of DOIs or handles and providing this network of data curators, providing this network of repository, Dataverse repository managers, providing this network of consultants, providing this network of coders. These are the smaller communities that want the support to have their installations could actually have it. You know, Odom themselves provides paid installation services, even though anyone who contacts the Institute for Quantitative Social Science group, Dataverse group, gets a lot of support, free support. I mean, most of what we do, I'd say about 99% of what we do is all free support. They contact us with questions about their installations all the time. Something's not working, or how do we fix this? And it's all free support that we give while this development group is building the code, doing their grants. Our curation team is managing the Harvard Dataverse. We're also putting all this effort into the community because it's important that they feel like they have the support they need to make this, you know, this sharing also happen wherever they are.
Yeah, so it's really, really interesting and really positive. It's a real example, I think, for others. So let's pick on one of the themes because we've talked. You just mentioned the curation and the training, but also the curation, which is your own background. And so you're involved with the curation and training both at Harvard and for the broader global community.
Absolutely.
What are some of the main challenges you've faced in introducing Dataverse to new institutions and new users? And what lessons have you learned?
So I've traveled quite a bit to introduce the software. Sometimes a developer follows along, depending on where the community is and getting their installations up. Some of the challenges are really that some of the communities are just starting. And so they're still developing a research data management program. They're still trying to deal with the politics of data sharing in their country. They're still trying to convince researchers on the benefits of data sharing, why it's important to share data. Individual researchers still have a lot of questions around control of their data, access of their data. And it's really getting and educating researchers on the benefits. So I think that while a lot of the newer installations start off immediately, they have a demo site up, they start talking about how to bring data on board, that there's this really large area of educating researchers and those who are going to be depositing data on the strengths of data sharing, why they should be doing it, and kind of putting their fears, calming their fears a little bit about data. That's really what I see. I mean, I get everywhere I go, there's always a question from someone in the audience about, well, you know, I don't want somebody accessing my data without, you know, permission or taking my idea. But it's also understand that there's workflows in place to prevent all of that. Understand that sharing this tool has been built over the past, 20 years, where we have taken and answered these questions and built features to support your control of the data. The institution supporting the installation always comes up with their ground rules. You know, Harvard's ground rules are, we are a platform for you to share your data. We're the plumbing, as we used to say. You come in and you control your data and you share it the way you're supposed to. You want to share it. We make sure that you're sharing it properly, right? Meeting standards, not violating anything. But you retain control of your data and who accesses your data and how your data are used. We try to educate you on why you should let people use your data. Even if your data are restricted, here's why you should let people use your data and here's how to facilitate data access on restricted content. And so a lot of it is these communities developing their research data management program within their libraries, the research data management program working with the installations to come up with a good way to reach out to researchers educate researchers on why it's important to share data, and really also be very open about how the tool works with the researchers and what the policies are with the researchers, because that's what they want to know. They want clarity, and they want to know everything that you're doing to support their data. So having this very open conversation, open access to what you are doing and the tool that you're building and its support for your community is really important.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's actually, those are stories from from hard-won experience, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I can't answer the question enough. You know, I tell people all the time, when I first did this, I sent out letters to every faculty and researcher describing everything that the Harvard Dataverse was supporting, why they should put their data. Everybody got a letter. It was never just a phone call. It was a letter detailing everything that you were getting by putting your data in there. I would develop the Dataverse page first for the faculty member. I would borrow some of their open data from their website. It was on their faculty website, not preserved, not, you know, no fair. There was no fair there. And I would create this draft page on Harvard Dataverse for them. And then I would invite them to look at it. And I would say, look at all the features your data set now has. And I did that, and my team did that for every single researcher when we first started getting data into the Harvard Dataverse. And as they saw what that looked like, and they could see download counts, and they saw that they had a formal citation, and they saw the DOI, and they saw the metadata, and they could see the versioning page, they could see the terms of access if they had questions around terms of access. It was that visibility that made them kind of understand the tool.
Hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. Great. Let's take a big kind of move from the trenches up to kind of a big picture question. So the RDM landscape has evolved really rapidly, and it seems to be accelerating in pace over the past 10 years, I think particularly over the past 5 years. So how do you see repositories fitting into the general RDM landscape? More types of tools like DMPs are playing a new role. New positions like data stewards are now becoming much more prominent and playing interesting roles in the landscape. New regulations are coming on board, like the new NIH data management and sharing policy. So how do you see repositories fit into this kind of dramatically shifting landscape?
Well, DMPs should have been happening always. It should have been something that was being used. I'll tell you, that's one of the other questions that we get a lot from the newer installations is, how do we get our researchers and faculty to fill out DMPs? How do we keep track of the DMPs, right? Because oftentimes somebody will complete a DMP, but it never gets integrated into whatever data they're sharing. So for Harvard Dataverse, we work in collaboration with the Harvard Library, right? The Harvard Library runs the research data management program. Harvard Dataverse itself is an entity or the Dataverse software comes out of IQSS. The Harvard Dataverse is managed by IQSS. Everybody thinks it's a library project, but the library and Hewitt support all of our storage. They support our DOIs. So there's this huge collaboration in order to have the Harvard Dataverse functioning, right? The libraries the librarians at the Harvard Library also do training on sharing data in multiple repositories, not just the Dataverse, but sharing content into OSF. And they do a very broad training on repositories. But of course, Harvard is going to focus on Harvard, right? We want them to use the Harvard Dataverse. But the libraries are running the research data management program. We collaborate with the library and get information on them. Hey, here's the new tool we have. Can you bring this to your community? The Harvard Library brings me into their meetings. Even though I'm not part of the library community, I am part of the library community because I go into their meetings. I meet all the librarians across Harvard. And I wouldn't get that opportunity unless I was working with the librarians. Okay. So in terms of the new role, you also know, for example, that repositories a number of repositories are now part of this GREI initiative, G-R-E-I. I say G-R-E-I. People say GREI. I'm trying to say GREI myself so I can get with it. So this is a collaboration to support NIH data, right? So all these granting agencies are putting out these mandates that data need to be shared. They need to be shared a certain way. And so now you have six repositories. I don't know if you want me to list them out for you, but Dataverse is one of them. There's at least one I can't mention yet because they still have to do a press release. Figshare is one of them. Dryad is one of them. And they are coming together to build consistent models in their repositories to share NIH data. So where we all kind of worked as separate entities, but we would, you know, we constantly communicate with each other. You know, I would contact one repository and say, how are you dealing with spam? We're getting spam. And we would collaborate and talk about best ways to do this. Now we really are working together to support this really large research community where we're still getting the same questions, by the way. We had our first NIH GREI webinar yesterday, and we were still getting the same questions about is my data going to be safe? How do I restrict content? But this is to say that repositories are helping funding agencies like NIH get their researchers to share data. That's a big deal. When we can come together and say, let's agree on a model, you have 6-7 repositories coming together saying, let's agree on a model where we can all help researchers select one of our repositories to share their data. So now we are really focusing as generalist repositories. We're really focusing on this one group. I can't say that many times we have one particular focus in a generalist repository. We open it up and say, come share your data. But now we're all focusing on building metadata tools specifically for NIH. Sensitive data sharing tools for NIH, because we know that comes with the grants, that comes with the territory. Open metrics, particularly for this collection that others can use, but we're really focused on these NIH researchers. That's a big deal to say that that we've all come together at this point to do something like this. We have webinars planned. So imagine we have webinars planned every month this fall. We just had our first one yesterday, around this NIH General Repository Environment grant. We have one in November, we have one in December, we have one in October. They're gonna focus on why use generalist repositories, best practices, the tools we're working on building to support large data, like Globus, right? I can talk about that at some point in this conversation. I don't wanna go off topic with your questions. The open metrics, the additional metadata, building models of support particular to NIH. I don't know when the last time you've had a number of repositories come together to work like this.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And I guess it's an example of the, or an indication rather, of kind of the maturing of the general repository mm-hmm. movement or scene that mm-hmm. and then stimulated by NIH, that the repositories are working together, and they've all the ones you mentioned, they've all established themselves as having some useful role, which is perhaps, and they all have their own personalities and their own strengths and things which focus on and their own history and all that stuff. But that's really good. Let's come back to Globus for sure. But before we do that, just pick up on the metadata point. So metadata is really important, and it's very topical. And it seems that we were just discussing this before we started the call here, just kind of chatting informally. But it seems that PIDs are becoming an even more important part of the RDM landscape, and that seems to be just exploding in importance. And how does Dataverse support DOIs and PIDs at the moment? And I think you were just saying you actually have plans for developing further support. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So currently, the Dataverse software itself supports DOIs and handles. The initiative, though, that we have with DataCite is to get all Dataverse repositories to use DOIs. The Dataverse software supports both data set level and file level DOIs. So you can choose which you want to provide. The model for the Harvard Dataverse at the moment is, of course, all data sets get DOIs, but only certain collections will get file level DOIs. And that's mostly because we're a generalist repository. We have hundreds of thousands of files, and there's a cost. And so if someone doesn't have a need for a file level DOI, then we're not going to provide it. We'll provide it, though, to a collection that wants file level DOIs. So that's the model we're using, that the software itself supports both. So there's this big initiative, again, with DataCite to have installations use DOIs, and then for consortium level installations of Dataverse, as we mentioned earlier before, you know, our pre-talk, Borealis, which used to be Scholars Portal, Brazil, which is also creating a consortium of Dataverse installations. We want each member of the consortium to have their own DOI prefix. That's something that we started the conversation on, because right now, Borealis, all of the, you know, plus 50, I think, institutions that use them, they're quite a large group. They all use the same DOI prefix. And so we'd like to be able to support consortiums at a better level with that. So this initiative with having us on the DataCite community, in the DataCite community, and involved in their meetings, give us a chance to really discuss the needs of the Dataverse community. I mean, DataCite doesn't just serve Dataverse. It serves a lot, yeah, you know, other repositories out there. So it's nice to get this little chunk of their time to really discuss how we can benefit Dataverse installations.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Excellent. Yeah, so actually I'm really curious. You mentioned Globus. So how does Globus come into the picture?
Globus is coming in nicely. So it's part of the Gray initiative. And it is going to us to help us support large data deposits into Dataverse installations. So we've been talking about Globus for a while. There's an initiative at Harvard called Harvard Data Commons, which is doing quite a bit. It is developing computational workflow support in terms of supporting metadata. There's also this integration between publishing systems and Dataverse installations. And then there's additional preservation features coming. But Globus is the one that we've been talking about to support large data. So those are the things that are on our roadmap, especially, and it does relate to NIH because, you know, we can assume that some of the data coming out of these projects are going to be fairly large. And of course, James Myers is leading this initiative on getting Globus and big data support up and running.
Wow, fantastic. Well, my mind is reeling. We've covered so many things.
It's so much. I know. It's so much.
But it's interesting. You know, if you take a step back and all the kind of things which are the hot topics, hot topics is not the right word to use. The important topics which are being discussed everywhere. And it seems like Dataverse is actually actively involved in innovating in collaborating with other groups and then in innovating in most or many of the areas which are really fundamental to RDM. So that's just, again, that's just further validation of how innovative and exciting Dataverse has mm-hmm. been and continues to be. So fantastic. Well, Sonia, this has been really exciting. So thank you so much for that inspiring conversation.
Oh, you are very welcome. And I always have a lot to share. Sometimes it's overwhelming myself trying to remember everything from beginning to end. People love to hear the beginning, the history of Dataverse and the stories of how we've gotten to where we are right now. And I always tell people, you know, I tell installations a lot, it's going to take you a few years to get off the ground. It really does. Once you start fresh, I mean, it took us 2-3 years to get off the ground and say, hey, let's let people in. And then there was a lot of work that went into it after that, too. So having your own repository is going to bring you a lot of institutional strength and recognition. But those first 3 years can seem like it's just never going to get off the ground, but it does. Once people know what you offer and they know the benefits that they get and the strength to sharing data, they really do get on board. I think even to this day, I do still send out my letters, very detailed letters, explaining to someone whose project is sitting on their website why they should be using a repository instead of keeping the data to themselves. So that I don't think that's ever ending. That's never ending. You're always going to get new researchers who are just starting to share data. And so you're going to have to continue to do that education and that training, which is something I actually really enjoy. So,
fantastic. Okay. Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussion.
I really did. This is really cool.
Great. The Fair Data Podcast is provided by fairdatapodcast.org and produced by Mehroz Ahmed. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Fair Data Podcast. New episodes are released every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. UK, and 5 p.m. Central European Time, and late in Asia Pacific. See you then.